What's up? It's Min, and welcome back to the Quality Under Pressure podcast. And if you're listening for the first time, make sure you link up with us on social media. We'd love to have more interaction there at QUP Podcast on Twitter and Quality Under Pressure on Facebook and Instagram. Today, we spoke with two friends of mine from graduate school, Dylan and Alex. I really enjoyed our conversation because we don't really see eye to eye on politics in certain ways, but we love talking about it, and it hasn't stopped us from being friends, and that's the way it should be. And I get why it's difficult, because someone's politics is a reflection of who they are at their core and the morals they follow. And I guess it's easier for us because we believe in the same ends, but maybe different means. But still, it's weird to lose a friend because of politics. But, you know, if you're a racist, I'm probably not going to be friends with that person either. Either way, we had a conversation on politics a few days after Super Tuesday. So we had some feelings. And I don't usually get salty about politics because, well, I don't really think there's a party that represents me. And I really think there's only one politician that does represent me. And I don't really have a lot of emotional investment because of that. But I was super salty about Super Tuesday. And we get into that in this episode. And I'm glad Dylan was able to end that part of the conversation on a positive note. I also asked Alex and Dylan what it's like to move to Minnesota and integrate into a new culture because they're not originally from here. And I've heard many people say that it's actually really difficult to make friends and find comfort and make Minnesota a home when you're not from here. So I asked them about that, which led us down this path of white lies. And we didn't really resolve anything, but it was interesting to get their perspective. So get ready for a little rambling, a lot of loud voices and disagreements, but it's all love and lots of fun. Welcome to the Quality Under Pressure podcast, a podcast that reminds you that a conversation is still a beautiful thing. My name is Min, joined by Dean, and today we are speaking with Dylan and Alex, who are two good friends of mine from graduate school. We all got masters in public policies, right? You guys didn't some other thing.
Boring.
No MERPs or what are the other ones? Human rights?
Human rights.
That's boring. Yeah, so we all got our MPPs from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Are they still in the top 10 for public affairs schools?
No, I think they dropped down.
Really?
Yeah, we're failures.
Oh, we did that.
Always top 10 in my heart.
That's right.
Yeah, I think they, not that rankings matter at all, but I think they're like 14 or something now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I suppose that is us, because there's going to be a lag effect. Like, it's not the people that are currently there.
Oh, well, that makes me feel great.
And I think we're going to get into two sort of different topics today because you guys both aren't originally from Minnesota. Where are you guys from originally? I mean, I know, but...
So this is Dylan, and I'm from California originally. I grew up in San Francisco.
San Francisco, okay. I told Dean San Diego, yeah, so I was a little off.
Completely different.
Yeah, yeah. Very different.
Okay.
And this is Alex, and I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Originally. Yeah. And then we're going to talk about politics because you guys don't work in politics. We're politics adjacent. We're in government.
Right. Yeah. So we're politics adjacent, but, you know, we both get involved with labor activism and we, at least I volunteer on campaigns and stuff. So
yeah,
I live a political life.
Yes. I think we'll always be close to that. Do you guys have any aspirations to fully enter that world?
No.
Dylan, you should, man. You'd be so good.
Thank you. That was the greatest compliment you could have given me. But, you know, I think like one day, like I would love to be like a state rep or like a city council person.
Yes.
I mean, I don't really care about national politics being in that world, but
certainly
I could see myself running for local office.
I can too. All the times like we had like group projects or just like sort of a larger table discussion at school, like you just had this presence and people just kind of like always listened to what you had to say. And I think you need that. Like, I think that's definitely a skill. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have all the other things in the background, too. Like, do you actually have policy knowledge or, like, do you believe in research? But obviously, you have those things, too. But I think at the core, like, if you don't have that charisma, what are you going to do?
Oh, well, thank you again.
Yeah. So we'll get into that. And I do want to talk about, if you guys don't mind, like, some of the labor and union stuff that you guys are so involved in. But we do send everyone through the speed round. And I already know I can't ask one question, which is cool. We have so many. Are you a morning person or a night person?
Morning.
You are now, or have you always been?
It's kind of flip-flopped. I mean, I was a school, went to school for education to be a teacher, so often I would have to, you know, be at school at 7 or 5 if I had to do a bunch of grading or prep work. So, but then other times I worked overnight, so whenever I have to be up, I'm up and tired.
Okay. Dylan?
I'm a night person. Mornings are bullshit.
That's exactly. favorite junk food?
Pizza.
All right, so are we talking like snacks? Are we talking like really unhealthy meals?
See, in my head, it was like the snack category. But that's fine. Pizza, yeah.
Pizza can be a snack.
Yeah, you know, do chips and salsa count?
I think so. That's on the healthy end of like probably junk food.
Fruits and vegetables in that. Dude. Come on.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you.
Who is one person you would love to meet? Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to meet Lyndon Johnson.
Nice.
Oh, shit. I feel like Keith Richards would be pretty fun.
Nice,
That'd be a pretty wild time.
Yeah. Who would play you in a movie?
Jonah Hill, because that's what all of the students that I subbed for would act like I look like.
Wow.
Well, you got the 5 o'clock shadow, kind of like he does. I don't know, some stupid blondie like Ryan Gosling or something.
Nice. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Teleportation.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
X-ray vision.
Mm, also a little creepier, but also a good one.
Yeah, I didn't fully think that one.
How many hours of sleep do you think you average?
6.5.
Ooh, that's too low, bro.
Oh, that's
Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like 8.5.
Nice. Really?
Yeah, I definitely need more sleep than probably your average person. I feel like death if I have less than 8.
Yeah, anything below 7 for me is just like, I don't think I function well.
Right.
What's your favorite movie?
Right now, probably Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Nice.
Let's see. There are just so many great movies.
It's a tough one.
Animal House is like one of my favorites of all time.
Nice.
Alex is judging me. That's fine.
You still like rent tapes and watch movies every week?
I rent DVDs. I have yet to track down a working VCR.
Would you guys rather fight a ghost, zombie, or vampire?
Zombie.
Oh, yeah, zombie, because you can fuck that dude up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone says zombie, but like vampires, like we know how to kill vampires too.
I don't have sticks, like stakes laying around.
Yeah,
like, and I don't feel like it's very likely that you're going to like injure the vampire to the point where like it can't get back at you. But the zombie, though, I put a lot of thought into this. The zombie, though, if you can at least like damage its leg or something, you can run away.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I would just finish it at that point.
Well, I mean, depends on how you're feeling that day.
It's true. Yeah. If I'm frightened. If I'm in flight mode.
Yeah.
But if I'm in fight mode.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have an all-expenses-paid trip to Cleveland or $50 in cash?
Cleveland.
50 bucks.
Nice, dude! Yes, I was waiting for that.
I just don't...
It's
no
the
offense,
wrong answer.
You know what?
But,
no offense, Cleveland, but, like, I got some other shit I need to do with 50 bucks.
Would you rather cure cancer or discover new life on a planet?
Cure cancer.
Cure cancer.
Yeah? Why? Tell me more.
I lost people to cancer, so it's close to home.
Yeah.
I think it's more unambiguously good versus what could happen if we discovered life.
Oh, Mr. Philosopher.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
You already took the good answer. So.
What's super boring to you guys? Baseball. Someone say baseball.
No, well, I was going to say sports in general.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I'm going to be really uncultured. I think jazz is like the most boring thing on the face.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unpopular opinion.
Unless there's loons.
That hurts a little bit. What's the best quality in a leader?
I would say being able to kind of read the pulse of the people that they're leading.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. I was going to say empathy or sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the difference is between the
two.
Empathy is when you've had that experience and you can...
Or you just kind of understand what they're thinking or going through.
And sympathy is just kind of like...
Feeling bad.
I feel a little bad, but you know, it doesn't hit that close to home.
Mm. But I mean, that's how I know it. That's how I use the words too, like empathy. Okay. Like I've gone through it, so like I know, and I'm fully in the same space that you are. And sympathy is, I may not have gone through it, but I feel bad for you and I care for you. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Where's the dictionary?
English language is deep.
Yeah. I'll do one more. Who's your favorite superhero?
I don't. I mean, I always liked Batman, but I don't
like him anymore because of Ben Affleck.
I was not going to say that. I wasn't ever like big into superheroes as a kid.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was very like superficial because there was when I was a.
It was too fake for you.
Well, the first one that I saw in theaters was Batman Returns, and at
which
that,
one is that one?
That was the one with the Penguin and Catwoman, and I was obsessed with penguins at around that time.
Is that Michelle,
so I remember like
Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
That's yep, right.
Nice, like bawling at the end of the movie because like the Penguin died. You know, spoiler alert for anybody. And then like the Penguin's like.
He's the villain.
Push him into the water, but it was penguins, and then they like gave him a watery funeral.
Oh, I was gonna say, didn't they do like a funeral procession?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like 5 or 6 at the time.
So it wasn't necessarily that Danny DeVito died; it was the reaction the penguins had to his death. Yeah, yes. I can see that.
And the penguins were like bad guys. I'm like, no, penguins are great.
Yeah,
because I was.
You empathize with those penguins.
Yes.
Oh wow, really? Yeah.
Empathize. Yes, because I'd had an evil leader in my life that died, so I could really feel for them. I'm joking.
Reagan?
It's like, why don't I understand
Reagan? That wasn't until my 18th birthday, thank you.
When did Reagan die?
June 5th, 2004.
Why do you know that?
Because it was my birthday.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, God damn, you and your trivia, man.
And he had died when I was at work.
So. Dylan, favorite superhero before we get into the topic of the day?
Hands down, Batman. And the reason for that is just like my dad had some like VHS tapes of like old Batman. The TV show.
Batman?
Yeah,
okay.
And so that just got me hooked as like a 4-year-old.
Yeah, nice. How's Ben Affleck?
I will not see that movie.
I don't think I've seen a Ben Affleck Batman.
No, me neither.
I saw Justice League.
Oh, I have. What's the one where like he and Superman fight and then they realize their mothers have the same name and that's what...
Batman versus Superman.
Wait, what?
Is that really what brings them together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, seriously? Spoiler alert. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I was never going to see it.
Like, no, don't waste your time. Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, we're going to have two different topics, but can we start with politics then? Politics, Super Tuesday?
Yeah.
We'll start with that one?
Whatever.
Let's get into it.
Okay. What's your guys' opinion on how Super Tuesday rolled out?
Yeah. So, when we're recording this, it's what? Saturday, March the 7th.
2 days removed.
Yeah. Super Tuesday was the 3rd. Alex and I, we both actually volunteer on Election Day. So we have kind of that firsthand view of democracy in action for Super Tuesday, and that's kind of cool.
But my polling place was, we had, mine was at a community center. We had a second precinct at the school that's connected, and we definitely had people that we had to be like, no, you're actually supposed to vote over there. Mm. And they're like, no, we vote here all the time, because they kind of move them between like the community room, the gym, and the school, so...
Yeah.
There's always a little confusion.
And then in your guys' position, are you just sort of overlooking the people that have volunteered and are working, or do you guys have direct contact with the people that are coming in to vote?
Both.
Okay.
Both, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're directly, like, in the room with everybody, and we will, like, cover for people if they're on break or, you know, help out and kind of finish things up. But a lot of it is kind of making sure that things are running smoothly and that questions get answered, and there's a couple roles that like we have to fill as assistant heads or head judges.
Yeah. Are you guys stoic and like mechanical, or do you still have personality while you're doing that? Yeah,
I mean, I'm kind of a cocky asshole, so that, that comes across
all
the time.
I don't know, all the time,
frequently.
I don't know, sometimes it's like I think part of it is the charisma that I was talking about earlier too.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I will take this flattery.
Yeah,
and I'll run with it.
So everything was fine. Well, I mean, nothing burned to the ground.
No.
Yeah.
And yeah, for your listeners, get out the vote next time around. Make sure that happens.
What is it, August 14th or
that
so?
That's the primary. Minnesota state primary.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What was the turnout like?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
So we had a kind of a competition in our precinct of who could guess how many voters would turn out in person that day. And I, shockingly somehow, was one voter off.
Wow.
So we had, I think, 901 people voting in person in the precinct that I worked at, out of a total of about 1,900 some registered voters. And then I don't know how many had turned out, you know, voted early or voted absentee. So I think, I mean, it was pretty good. I remember working back in 2016, I think, for the primary, and like 100 some people showed up just because you know, by then we'd already picked who was going to be running for president, and then it was like really low level kind of uncontested races mostly. So
how do you guys feel about the results in Minnesota? Let's start there, and then I think we'll go across the whole thing.
My heart was with Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And I was just so bummed that she didn't even win a single state.
Yeah.
She
didn't even win her own.
You know, she came in third in her own in Massachusetts. Yeah, that was a heartbreaker for me.
Yeah. Same for you, Grill?
Yeah.
I mean, but did you guys think she was gonna maybe take one state? Like that's fine, but
yeah, I thought she was gonna at least get a state.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Maybe
and just better. Like, and I, you know, like instead of getting like 12-13% in some states, she might have gotten 15-16-17-18%.
Okay.
So I mean, I
just marginally better, but
yeah, enough to get more delegates and
because you can't get delegates unless you're above that 15% threshold.
Yeah.
So she did get some delegates, but she
level because if you're like in a congressional district, if you get 15%, you can get some of those delegates.
Oh yeah,
15 statewide.
The math is all crazy.
So you guys are bummed out about how things turned out in Minnesota and then across the nation. But again, you can't be too bummed out. Like, I don't know what you guys were expecting.
Yeah.
More. I mean,
we can always hope that, you know, our candidate goes all the way. Yeah, I think over the past week, we've had a complete shift in the narrative of the election because, you know, Joe Biden went from being like 1 foot in the grave in terms of his campaign.
Yeah.
And now he's surging to be the front runner. It's kind of crazy how fast his fortunes turned. And I think that was mostly because Pete dropped out on Sunday, Pete Buttigieg dropped out on Sunday, and then Amy Klobuchar dropped out on Monday.
Which was weird because, like, at least the Pete dropout was weird for me because, like, go back like 3 weeks, he's like the front runner, quote unquote,
among,
and then a couple of the early primary and caucus states, like, go a certain way, and then all of a sudden, like, here comes Joe Biden. And then I'm sure like some like backroom talking happened and it's like, hey, would you guys mind if we begin to fall in order here?
I think the issue with both Amy and Pete, in my mind, is that, you know, they struggled to get supporters who weren't white.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do really well in Iowa, New Hampshire if you do really well only with white people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both Nevada and South Carolina kind of showed that appeal wasn't there, and many of the Super Tuesday states are also very heavily non-white voters, and I know that like Amy Klobuchar, even though she did well in some of the more recent debates and did surprisingly well in a couple of those early states, she didn't have the infrastructure to take advantage of getting that extra money and getting that extra support. So it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not just about who people are theoretically in favor of. You have to actually get them to the polls. And I think that was also reflected on Super Tuesday.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Klobuchar dropout wasn't as surprising to me, but like we were saying, like 3 weeks ago, like all this, Pete had all this energy, and then it was just like, you're dropping a little bit, but like, I don't know, it felt like there was wind behind his back.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally believe the conspiracy that the DNC got to him.
Oh, nice.
But I think there was probably like something of a push and pull. So like they could see the writing on the wall that it was going to be probably a hard campaign, especially in trying to get non-white voters. And then even then, you know, Pete Buttigieg would probably have anywhere between 6-20% of the delegates. So, you know, why slog through this giant campaign when Joe Biden was definitely going to start rising a lot more? And then you have these people who are hounding you to kind of consolidate that middle of the road vote.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably a mixture of both, really.
Yeah, for sure. Are we surprised that we haven't even brought up Bloomberg? Are we surprised with anything that happened? He got second in California?
Biden got second in California.
Are we sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm not going to look it up, but yeah, sure.
Yeah. I don't have to look it up either. I think he got second in California.
He definitely got some delegates, but definitely not many. And the only place he won outright was American Samoa, which is
nice.
Fantastic because he spent $500 million at least to win American Samoa.
Yeah, I know,
which,
I know.
Really, at that point, you could buy American Samoa, so you might as well have just done that.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, I don't understand how that, like, did The Rock endorse him or something? Like, like, how did that all happen?
And I'm sure he had uncontested airwave kind of
Do you guys know? Do you guys remember when he hopped into the race? Because like, I'm just thinking like
October or November, right?
In my mind, he jumped in even later. It felt later. It may not have been, but it felt to me like November, December.
Yeah. So like that was like sort of the striking thing that, because when I was looking at it, I'm like, he's in second place in California. Like, you can literally jump in that late and spend that much money and be that okay.
Yo, and that shit worked.
Yes.
On my, definitely on my parents. My mom and my stepdad were like, oh, yeah. This Bloomberg guy seems like a great dude.
They're still back out in on the West Coast?
No. So, okay. And we can get into this when we talk about being transplants, but my mom and my stepdad, and they have my two brothers, my half brothers, they moved out to Minneapolis. So they actually voted here in Minnesota. And Minnesota is one of the states that Bloomberg's been targeting because his whole strategy was to focus all of his money on the Super Tuesday states. Mm. But yeah, they were totally in line for Bloomberg until I was like, hey, you know that he has had like a really checkered past, to put it like lightly, when it comes to women and people of color. Mm-hmm. Like, you may want to rethink this.
Yeah. Do you still have that up, Grill?
Yes.
What were the actual numbers?
So currently with 89% reporting, according to the New York Times, Bernie Sanders got 33.7%, Joe Biden 26.3%, Bloomberg got 13.6%.
Okay, in California.
Got 12%.
Nice, okay. Got it.
Fucking Bloomberg beat out Warren in California?
Yeah.
Oh, that's tragic.
But that's what I'm saying. Like again, I like Warren, but like I knew it wasn't going to be a thing. That's why when you guys are like, I'm bummed, and as you should be, like, even I was a little bummed, but like,
and I think it's the, like,
but I'm not surprised.
Not surprised that she didn't get 50%, but just depressed that she didn't get 15, 16, 17%.
Sure.
She could have gotten more of the.
Also, Klobuchar has way too much sway in Minnesota. Holy shit.
Yeah.
She's been around senator for 14 years. And
yeah. Minnesotans love her.
Oh, yeah. And my girlfriend's grandmother, who's like 93 and like was a registered Republican since, I don't know, math, since the 30s or 40s. I mean, even she loves Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. Like, it's not even close to Minnesota. Like, the fact that she gets both. I mean, I guess she's not like super one side or the other, too. So that kind of helps. But like, Minnesotans will like listen to everything she says. So, like, that was one thing that, again, I was...
Her and her awful colloquialisms.
I know.
Uncle Dick in the deer stand.
I know.
People here are folksy. Get used to it.
People here are folksy. Yeah, it's not intentional. I just am apathetic about politics because I think in my early 20s, I thought I was a Democrat. I thought Democrats represented me. But very quickly, in a two-party system, I realized... that is not the case. And so I very much feel like I'm left out of that conversation. And so then now I don't really have a party. And so it's just like, I don't give a shit. Like, obviously I pay attention and try to do my part and all of that. But like, I don't really give a shit unless something exciting happens that maybe is closer to something that represents me. And so I don't know why, but I got super salty on Tuesday. And I was like, fuck Klobuchar, like, all this sway in Minnesota. I can't believe, like, Minnesota went for, like, a centrist. Like, we're so proud about, like, how blue we are and, like, how progressive we can be. And just, well, like, we just didn't do it.
That's the cities, man.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get outside of the Twin Cities, the kind of that liberal, almost socialist streak kind of ends kind of quickly.
Really quickly.
I mean,
you don't even have to go that far. I mean, just think about Michelle Bachmann district is what, an hour away from the city.
Is it even that? I thought it stretched into the northern suburbs.
Yeah. Oh,
when
yeah.
When she was representative, it even went eastern suburbs as well. But I mean, coming from Nebraska, where things are so much more conservative, the fact that we have, you know, state reps and state senators that are very left-wing in Nebraska, like, we have two or three of those, and the kinds of things that Minnesota has done in the past and continues to try to do, at least, like, they are pretty progressive in the grand scheme of things, at least. So mm-hmm. like, you know, I consider myself very left-wing, so like, obviously I'm not always happy with what the governor does all the time or the stances that our politicians take, but they do many things well, and compared to what they could be, they're amazing.
Yeah. So, Min, why why don't you think the Democratic Party represents you?
I think people look at the Democratic Party and see the Democratic Party of like our grandmothers and grandfathers and think about all the stuff they've done in the past and think maybe they're the same party. Mm. And I don't think we don't live in that world anymore. I think the Democratic Party is now, and I don't know, maybe they were back then too. Like, I think they're a very centrist and very corporate friendly party. And that's why, like, when we talk about, like, the Bernies and the fact that, like, the Warrens can't even break through, but I think at its core, that is a large reason why.
And I hear you. I guess I'm just kind of like a pessimist, a cynic.
Yeah.
And I just assume that everything's going to suck, so I might as well choose the best option.
Yes.
And that's why like, the Democratic primary matters to me. Mm-hmm. Because, like, yeah. Like, I mean, I totally feel the same way. It's just, like, pick your poison. Well, I clearly can't, even with all my frustration, I'm not going to run towards like a racist party. I'm just going to run towards this disappointing party. You know, I just like, that's why I was saying earlier, like, sometimes like I don't really have a choice.
But here's the sad truth is that the Democratic Party of the 60s was not exactly full of angels either.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It had a lot of the people that are now the, you know, had people that would now be the core of the kind of Donald Trump.
But it was also at the same time, like, it's been a mix of racists, people who are way too centrist, and then also a weird mix of socialists and anti-war people. And it's been like that for actually decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of the Dakotas earlier, George McGovern, who ran for president in 72, he was the senator from South Dakota, which we now think of as a bright red state. Mm-hmm. And he ran pretty much as a socialist just without the label. He was Bernie back then. You know, he was for all these great ideas. And he was in the same party at roughly the same time as, what's his name, Wallace from Alabama?
George Wallace.
George Wallace from Alabama, who was just such a conservative racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I both hear you in terms of like the Democrats have rested on their laurels for a long time,
right,
but I
right.
also recognize that I think it's always been a shade of gray and that exact hue of the gray has changed over time.
And I think it's important to see what happened between kind of that heyday of the change in the 60s and now, where the Democrats in many ways tried to continue running those kinds of traditional FDR style liberal campaigns and kept getting their asses handed to them.
Mm.
And the only way that they found that they could win a presidential election is by running a centrist. And so that then there's this fear that's kind of inbred in a lot of traditional Democratic voters of, we would rather have someone relatively milquetoast who isn't going to push for everything that maybe we need, because they'll stop the person getting elected who's going to do all the awful, horrible things that will affect our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I definitely agree with parts of everything that you guys are saying. But like that fear you're talking about obviously didn't pan out in 2016. Like we were saying, like we could go with someone that maybe carries the spirit and the energy we hope the Democratic Party is going to be, or we can go with, what did you say, milk and toast? Burnt toast?
Milk toast.
Milk toast. The Hillary Clinton option, and it didn't work.
It's hard to unlearn the lessons of decades after one election, and other people might disagree with your interpretation.
So like you think like the Obama and like the Clintons, like that's what we should base it more off of?
No, I'm saying that the thinking behind it is that, you know, we ran George McGovern and he got one state and the District of Columbia. We were able to win in 76 because the Republicans had a horrendously corrupt and lawbreaking president who had to resign in disgrace. And then we lost running a relatively moderate but still somewhat progressive campaign in 1980 to super conservative, somebody who started his campaign, a big announcement at the, you know, a county fair in Mississippi talking about states' rights in the area where civil rights workers had been murdered 16 years before that. And then three elections where, once again, another election where we ran a pretty liberal candidate, got one state and the District of Columbia. We got another one where we you know, ran somebody who was principled and answered questions about something like capital punishment. And if, you know, your wife was raped and murdered by someone, would you support the death penalty? And he's like, well, no, because the death penalty is bad. What happened? Lost again.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, in 92, we ran somebody who was out, you know, an outsider, not normal, pretty centrist, new Democrat from the South. And we were able to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went, won again. And we almost won again with somebody who was, you know, kind of boring, but whatever. I feel like you can't ignore all that happened before.
Just because
one election where the person that you thought was more inspiring.
Oh, for sure.
Didn't get the nomination, and then we lost.
And the beauty of Barack Obama was that he was not the most left-wing candidate. I think he ran to the left of Hillary Clinton at the time, but he was still something of a center-left candidate.
Oh, for sure.
But he was just such a brilliant orator, and he developed such a great movement that you just felt like you wanted to be a part of it, and you felt like it was something radical, even if it wasn't necessarily. So
I know what you mean, yeah. Again, there's that energy. Like, there was like a buzz, and like, even though, I mean, that's like a fascinating thing. Like, I think so many of us that are like technical and in that world look for like sort of perfect alignment. But like Obama wasn't that for many people, but they felt like it was, and there was a certain energy, and so people were able to get behind it.
And then, but then he wasn't able to deliver on a lot of the stuff that he had.
I mean,
promised.
That's weak.
What I'm afraid of.
That was weak for sure. When he had total control, and they could have.
Well, I mean, I think it just goes to show that it's never as easy as we like to think it is, and you know, you have to deal with the personalities in the legislative.
Also, can we like say like we Americans probably put too much weight on the presidency. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many other things that we could also probably distribute weight to, but we just don't. Like, we're fascinated by who's the president.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why I consider myself to be, I consider myself to be more aligned with the Democratic Party than necessarily just like an overall liberal. And it's because we always tend to think of these major politicians kind of stand alone, when in reality, they got to where they are because of these ground games, because of these big institutions that vetted people over decades and give people the tools and the funders to kind of get to a place where they need to be. And you can debate whether or not the whole system is moral, and arguably parts of it aren't,
mm-hmm.
but it's the system that we have. And so sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and work within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, again, like I was saying, like, I usually just stay out and keep my emotions out of it, so it's weird that I got salty on Tuesday, but just like, okay, like, people say they know what they're doing, and so, okay, like, I trust them, just please fucking win this time, please! So
right.
I give Democrats a lot of shit about, like, it seems like when it comes to Democrats versus Republicans, they don't know how to win. But when it comes to like Democrats versus Democrats, at least like the establishment Democrats, then all of a sudden you're really good at politics.
That being said, I'm not going to take shots at Bernie over that or hardcore progressives. I believe that there needs to be a soul and a conscience of the left wing in the country. And I think Bernie has been able to tap into that. And
yeah.
I really wish that Elizabeth Warren had.
Yeah.
Obviously didn't work out.
Would you guys like to see... I think we're also kind of saying, like, some centrists are centrist, even though they might believe in more, like, left-leaning policies, but they're playing a game. And so they place themselves there. Would you guys like to see the Democratic Party as a whole move more to left-leaning policies, like, more closer to Bernie, if it were possible and it made sense?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here and prevent Alex from speaking. I 100% agree. So I grew up in San Francisco, which is obviously one of the most left-leaning places in the country. I come from a hardcore left-wing background, and my biggest dream in life is that everybody can get affordable health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Medicare for all is like something that I was championing when Barack Obama was running in 2008. And Alex, I'm sure, has been a big fan of it for even longer.
Because I'm old.
Because he's old. I think there is a difference here between centrism and moderates,
mm-hmm.
centrists and moderates. So centrists are people who actually have their political viewpoints in kind of the center of that spectrum. And moderates are more people who are willing to kind of, you know, play the game, and they'll trade some of their ideas, some of their proposals away to kind of make that incremental progress. And that was the kind of idea that Hillary Clinton ran on in 2016. And technically, it won her the popular vote. Didn't win her the Electoral College, though. So I think there are both of those strands, centrism and moderates, in the Democratic Party. I would say, in terms of who I am, I'm very left-wing, but I do have a moderate streak because sometimes I'd rather get something done than than lose out on the chance to have, you know, the big change that I want.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to understand that, like, of the people that were running this year who supported, you know, like what Pete Buttigieg called the, you know, Medicare for all who want it, like that position we like to think of as the conservative position or the moderate position. But in 2008, that was the left wing position of, like, within the Democratic Party.
Was it?
Yeah. I think Obama was against a public option. Either I think Clinton supported a public option, Obama was against it. Maybe I've confused the two, but like, they basically said, like, oh, like, we couldn't get that passed.
Oh.
We don't want to have a public option. That's too risky. And it's shocking that in 14 years or 12 years, that's changed so much. It's good. But I think that people often look at the, you know, so-called moderates in the race as like being these like dinosaurs who don't support any kind of progress when the positions they actually hold, while not good enough for people like me, for us, are actually, you know, they've moved forward and moved leftward already since 2000.
Well, because people like us are bitching so much, and there is like a Bernie, and that's one thing that I really like I didn't think Andrew Yang was gonna win, but having him in that conversation and pulling people to like more technocratic ideas, and like bringing up like UBI and stuff like that. I appreciate him so much for dragging people a certain direction. So like having him, maybe we'll see downstream, like the stuff that you're saying, like in 08, we were all kind of in that centrist position, but now we've come this far. And so like having Andrew Yang in the conversation, I definitely appreciate him for that.
Yeah, I mean, universal basic income is a great idea.
Depending on its execution.
I mean, we'll see. So some places are doing it, right? So Finland is doing it. The city of Stockton, California is trying it out.
Oh, nice.
And I think it's working to a certain extent. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes just more than just simply giving people $1,000 and hoping that they stay afloat. Like, there's an idea that by having this amount of money, it frees you up to do more of the things that kind of value your community, that we don't typically compensate for, we as a society. So it's some of that's kind of hard to measure if people really do go out there and they start these community groups, they get more involved with philanthropy or volunteerism. So
yeah, I think definitely like it's so easy to say UBI is going to free people up, but I think they're attached has to be sort of an educational campaign too, because like our education and our civics education isn't so good these days. So it's just like, what does, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, lower income people, like obviously like we know the logarithmic curve and they're going to use the $1,000 on essentials. Like they just don't have a choice, you know? And so, but like at a certain point, like, yeah, some of that money is going to go, like the moral hazard that we learn in econ, like it is a concern. You have to factor it in.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, let's be real.
Where is that eye roll?
Well, like, I feel like if you're at the point where like that $1,000 a month is between like life and death, like paying rent, paying for food, paying for electricity, like I'm not worried about moral hazard because it's not enough money for you to like.
And that is the population that gets the most like, oh, they're gonna buy TVs.
Like, well, so what? Let them.
Although
that's the point of UBI is like, here is your money. Like, we're trusting you to do with it as you please.
That's my Fox News voice.
If I get $1,000 a month, like $40 a month from that is definitely going to get some weed. Like, so like, yeah, but I'm also going to probably like donate more and
pay off your debts.
Oh, for God's sake, my student debt. Yeah, pay off more of that.
Why are you guys in a hurry to pay it off? Aren't you guys going to PSLF it?
I mean, yeah, but
so like when they haven't like paid out any of it yet because
What do you mean? There's no one's ever
not received? No one, but like the tiniest percentage of people have actually been able to complete the paperwork to the satisfaction of the group that is running the program. And we don't know if it's going to be continued because one of those Obama things that I'm sure Trump's got his eye on.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was created in what, 2004?
I thought it was an Obama thing. Because I know like that.
Yeah, definitely later than that.
Like teachers have.
Well, I thought it was signed into law in 2004 and then it didn't go into effect until a certain amount of time later. Maybe 2004 is too early, but I could have sworn it was actually under Bush.
Well, dude, yeah, because it's like.
Because it was like the 10
people
years
that started
just
making payment
now.
After 2007.
Well, either way, it's
we're
not
really in the weeds of public service loan forgiveness.
Well, basically, like I don't trust it to be there and to actually benefit.
I'm banking on it being there. Yeah. So,
yeah, me too.
How do you qualify for that again?
10 years of working in like public sector or nonprofit, and you have made
So you like set up a certain level of payment, mm-hmm. and then you make all your payments.
Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, the minimum amount you can pay a month.
And it's like, you know, they track your paperwork and you have to make all your payments on time and all that kind of stuff. And
120 months of on-time payments to the...
According to a plan that they set up for you.
Yep.
But
so,
a lot of people haven't...
And it doesn't have to be consecutive. Know that.
It doesn't? Mm-mm. Sure.
Know that. Believe that. Oh, I 100%. Read that website. I read that website because I am not trying to get fucked in the A.
Because I feel like you're going to because that's the way it's being run at least.
Maybe,
right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have lube ready, but I did my homework at least. I know to have lube.
Right.
You know, I'm at least there. Okay, enough about lube and getting fucked in the A. Do you think if things continue as the way they do and Biden is essentially the person that rises to the top, is he going to beat Trump?
Yes.
Wow, that is optimistic.
I feel like unless something crazy happens, I don't see us in such a different position as 2018.
But also, like, shit, man, what other option do I have?
We'll vote.
Yeah. But, like, I have to believe that he's going to win because it's going to keep me, well, mentally sane through the next 6 months. So, like, I have to believe that Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders is going to lock this up. Or Tulsi Gabbard, the only other person still in this race.
Look at that fat eye roll.
But also, fuck Tulsi Gabbard. If you haven't read up on her, read up on her.
Oh, man.
Yeah, what's that about? Why hasn't she dropped out yet?
Because she's a Russian puppet, and who knows?
Wow, really?
I don't think it costs her anything to keep running.
Sure.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think she's... So some people theorize that she's trying to kind of lay the groundwork for maybe a third party run if the Democratic nomination doesn't pan out, which it won't.
Dude, I don't think so, man. I've heard her reiterate that she is not going to run as a third party.
She says that. Some other people, namely me, are convinced that she's doing all this work and running as kind of like a weirdly conservative Democrat and then also a very pro-authoritarian government foreign policy Democrat in order to get a job at Fox News.
Oh, nice.
That's my
favorite place.
That's my theory. Because she's also a regular contributor on Fox News. So that's my theory.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think Biden beats Trump?
Like I said, I have to believe that. But
honestly, like.
I think so. I mean,
when
you look at them, you know, I'm going to run into the same traps that Hillary ran into, like that he is so much more likable than Trump is. That he's so much more of a decent person. Everybody kind of recognizes that. I mean, they're going to run his name through the mud like they did for Hillary in 2016.
Do you think everyone recognizes that? Or, like, we believe that?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think if you asked, like, people who are maybe, you know, Republican but will sometimes cross the aisle and vote for a Democrat candidate, not just for the president but for any election, like, a lot of them will say, you know, Joe Biden's a decent man, but I may disagree with him on X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's that decent man running up against such a horrible liar who's fucking up this coronavirus thing, who's fucking up everything, who's being racist all the time, mm-hmm. he's got kids in cages, like, at a certain point, like, everything's got to stack up so high against Trump that you would hope that just, like, such a decent guy as Joe Biden, I mean, who does have his baggage, but it ain't right. It ain't kids in cages baggage.
Right.
You know, you got to hope that that's going to make an impression on people.
Yeah.
And I think that Hillary had, like, decades of people running her name through the mud. to kind of lay that groundwork so that people would believe the worst of her. That, I mean,
my redneck relatives hate her for no reason. It's like, weird. She's never.
Well, because she, you know, killed that guy, remember?
Well, that Epstein guy?
No. No, this was 1990s killing people.
Oh, there's nice. A conspiracy theory that, who was it? It was like the general counsel for the White House committed suicide, and some people thought the Clintons were behind it. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but like this was a pretty, I mean, it was definitely a conspiracy theory, and a lot of people recognize that. But in conservative circles, like some people took it very seriously.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
But yeah, just like decades and decades
of shit like that.
Yeah,
I think,
I don't think that's happened to Biden. So I think that
maybe
even if people don't love him or anything or think he's all that great, they don't have like that automatic like, oh,
well, he's a dude.
Remember
too.
All these.
Well, yeah.
I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. Again, like when it comes to that sort of closer to center Republican that's willing to hop over the aisle every once in a while, like at least he's a white guy.
Right.
That's huge.
Right.
Yeah.
You guys,
unfortunately.
Do you guys listen to Love It or Leave It or listen to John Lovett?
No.
Okay. So he's a former speechwriter for both Obama and Hillary Clinton and something of a comedian. And he's like, you know, my grandpa would vote for Bernie Sanders if he was still alive today, but he would do it thinking that America would never vote for a socialist Jew.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still think Bernie could probably do it because he does have such an appeal of changing things, and nobody's going to doubt that he's in it for the right reasons. I think because he's shown his commitment to his values since God, the 60s, mm-hmm. that like people will take him seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That's one thing that Bernie has. You have to take him at his word.
Because he's only been by his word. And his word, you can debate whether or not his ideas are good, but I am 100% convinced that he is committed to his ideas. Mm-hmm.
That is one thing definitely on his side. I also felt, I mean, obviously I agree with everything you said earlier, Dylan, but it made me think, we are in our own bubble. When you're talking about like how decent a person Joe Biden is, and like, yes, like you're going to have to work through his baggage and look at his accomplishments, and we can go down the checklist of all the shitty things that Trump has done. I think that matters to us. And like, we're trying to like analyze the situation. I don't know how much that matters to someone that's casual about politics, someone that makes their decision who they're going to vote for 2 days before Tuesday. I don't think that matters, man. I think that what matters is like what they feel. And if they're close to the center and like Trump has like the right energy at the moment.
So
I think that's Biden's going to lose.
Yeah.
Why would that center person not vote for Biden, but vote for Bernie?
Again, wait, what?
Well, you said like somebody's in the center making the decision at the last minute. Why would they vote for somebody who's farther from them?
Yes, I did say that, but like also like that energy part was more what I was leaning on. Like, like when Hillary is running against Trump, I'm like, this is a fucking layup. Like, no one should lose to this joke, and she still
did.
Buddy,
I miss layups all the time. Buddy,
I know. So there's like at the Humphrey School, when our first semester, there was this class called the Art and Science of Political Campaigns. I took that class, and we were basing it off of political models that people have used year in and year out. But what we said at the end of that class, because we tracked the election real time, because it was the first semester, September through December, and we were like, holy shit, like it's the art that matters so much more right now. And that's what we have to, I think, tap into. And that's where I think like even the polls say like Bernie beats Trump in a national election. But that's what I want to tap into, is that magic that Dylan can like sit in front of people and tell them like Joe Biden is a decent person, and like he has these accomplishments, and look at all these fuck ups that Trump has, but give someone 24 hours, man, they're going to forget that shit. And like when they go vote, it's just going to be about how they feel.
Well, do you remember some of the magic that both Biden and Obama Bernie have?
Huh?
The magic that both Biden and Bernie will bring to this campaign that Hillary wasn't able to?
I don't follow.
He's being sarcastic.
I'm saying that they're both men, and that I think a lot of people, consciously or subconsciously, didn't like and didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a woman.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so that edge won't be counting against either Biden or Bernie. Mm-hmm. So even if Biden doesn't have the kind of radical outsider energy.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you want every advantage, though?
Because it's not a unique advantage without any downsides.
I think you can also get to a place. I mean, Biden is, I think we can all agree, a kind of a shit campaigner. but, I mean,
he still is winning.
He's still winning. I think a lot of it is due to fear, and people are voting for him out of fear. And, you know, we can look into the numbers behind that. But I think one of the smartest things he could do if he does get the nomination is unite the party with some very left-wing vice presidential running mate and have that person be kind of a Bernie type, either Bernie Sanders or somebody of his ilk who can mobilize
somebody
people.
Under 75.
For God's sakes, we need somebody under 70.
Or 60, even, I mean, like, young as we can get them. Come on.
Just a spring chicken.
Yep.
I suspect, and the rumor mills that I've heard are that, you know, Kamala Harris is a top vice presidential pick. Cory Booker is a top one, although he's a little bit more maybe moderate than Kamala is. Stacey Abrams of Georgia has been kind of billed around. And some of the things that these people bring together to the table is that they are young. They are people of color who can appeal to, well, people of color who we want to be a part of the Democratic Party. And then they also have those kind of ideas that will push Biden to more of a liberal stance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if he's smart, that's what he'll do. But this is the Democrats, and they're going to fuck it up.
That's how I feel. They're so bad. They're bad at winning.
Well, if you'd like the Democratic Party to be different, you can always get involved with the Democratic Party and change it.
Smart ass.
Wow, really? I don't know. But again, I don't think that's going to work. If I get involved, I think it's too easy to push certain types out.
So you're saying that you're a Bernie Sanders fan, but you're not going to actually get involved in politics and be a part of a movement?
I mean, I'm behind him. I am behind him. The donations, the volunteering, like, I've done that for his camp.
Okay. Well, you just got to translate that into
going to your caucus.
Fuck caucusing. Caucusing is stupid.
I mean, if you want to complain about the party and not change the party, yet not build a different party, like,
I think there are a variety of ways that you can change things within that system. And one of them is caucuses, but as we all know, caucuses are bullshit. Another thing you could do is you vote with your heart, and you vote in the primaries, not just for the presidential election, but for any kind of office, city council. If you want a Green Party or a socialist person on your city council, go ahead and vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
And follow your heart. And eventually, over time, it sucks that it doesn't happen right away. But over time, you and people who think like you vote for these people who do slowly change the party.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. I mean, I get it. I like the way Dylan put it a lot better because it's hopeful. But the way you put it makes me get the options are move this fucking mountain or move this fucking mountain. I'm like, why do I have to fucking move the mountain?
Because the problem that you've identified is a mountain that needs to be moved.
Yeah.
And that's why it takes more than one person. It's not like you men alone are going to solve everything.
But it's I'm saying the Democrats now are, they'll say, hey, we'll help you move the mountain. We care about you. But then it's like when it comes time to move the fucking mountain, it's like you move this mountain or you move. I'm like, where's the fucking help then?
Well, so you want us to move the mountain for you?
No, I don't.
I'm confused. You were saying
either stop bitching or do this or do this. And like, yeah, and help me do it.
Well, because that's the idea is that like me, a establishment Democrat who's been identified as a Democrat all my life, get a little annoyed with people who come in like after the system has been built where they had ample opportunities to get involved or something like that and then blame me for all that's wrong with it. And it's like, oh, you Democrats are fucking stupid and fucking lazy. And it's like, well, where were you all this time with your similar ideas to me? And you're coming and complaining about from the outside.
Well, you can make the argument that some people are pushed out of the.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't. But so like when you say that, you
just
don't think
men.
You don't think there are communities that have been suppressed and left out of the process? Like, as a Democrat, you must believe that.
There are. And there are other people who, like Bernie Sanders, I don't believe would be fit a community like that. He could have, you know, I mean, obviously he doesn't believe in being a part of the Democratic Party, and that's perfectly fine.
But I would say it's not fine. I think he should be a part of the Democratic Party. I think it would go a long way. But, you know,
I guess I just, throughout this process of 2016, 2018, 2020, there's been a lot of complaining about how, like, the DNC runs things. When
I think it's oversimplified, though, when you say, like, hey, like, come get involved, come take the DNC from us and change it to the way you want to see it, because people have been left out. It's not that easy.
But I don't think that the issue is it's as simply they have either been left out or they are involved now and they're running things. I think there's a full gamut of people that many people have been left out. But a lot of people haven't been left out. They just haven't tried to get in.
For sure.
And then another thing I would add is that there are a lot of misconceptions about politics. One is that the DNC actually matters. The DNC doesn't matter. The DNC, like, what it really operates as is mostly like a source of fundraising. Mm-hmm. Like, what they do, yeah, they put on some debates for the presidential races, but, like, they famously gave, through Donna Brazile, they famously gave Hillary Clinton, some of the questions at that debate. And it always bugged me that Bernie Sanders fans were complaining that the system was rigged against him. But if you think about it, Bernie Sanders should have assumed what questions they were going to ask anyway, because if you're a politician worth your salt, you know what they're going to ask you. And so I don't think that was a real advantage. But anyway, DNC doesn't actually matter. It's mostly just fundraising, some light, I guess, debate prep. And then really the bulk of the power that Democrats have is in some of these smaller things like the voter registries that they keep track of. Mm-hmm. They make politicians pay for it when they run their campaigns. You have to kind of rent from the national party or the state party to get access to these voter files. And that just is going to disadvantage a newcomer because they have to raise the money in order to get access to resources like that. And there are reasons why they have to have the money to run it. So that's why the state parties do charge for these things. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's a complicated process and it's not something you can just change overnight. Mm-hmm. But change does need to happen. And I'm confident that we can change that. And again, I have to be optimistic because if I'm not optimistic, I'm crying.
Yes. And losing our hair and losing our minds. And yeah. I mean, I'm glad you guys are optimistic. I think we need people for sure saying that, you know, don't give up. And again, like, that's part of your message about, like, when I was bitching about, like, dude, it's really fucking hard to, like, involve people that have been pushed out. But like you're saying, like, still, you have to get involved. Yeah. At a certain point, at a certain level, you have to get mm-hmm. involved. And I agree. I think that's the key takeaway. And
I think one thing that has me particularly hopeful is that the Democratic Party, and I say this as if there is a monolith of the Democratic Party. And again, as I just mentioned, like, it's not. It's all these splintered bits that kind of somehow come together to be Democrats. Mm-hmm. The general consensus among all Democrats is that we need to do better in reaching those people who have been ostracized and getting them to be a part of this movement, even if it's not Bernie Sanders or even if it's Joe Biden bumbling along to whatever it is he's bumbling along to. We have to reach out to these folks and bring them in. And I'm actually really hopeful that within the next either 6 months to the next two decades, like, we're going to make this change that needs to happen.
I hope so. Let's end on at least a positive note and talk about how hard it is to move from a different state to Minnesota.
Vastly different topics. Yeah,
oh, man. No, thank you, though. Thank you for that uplifting ending. I think we need it. I was salty on Tuesday, back to apathetic by Thursday. But I don't think I'm optimistic about November. And you guys know Cody and Buck,
yeah,
our other grad school friends that have been on this show a couple of times. And the three of us are the same way. We're just like, you better get ready or you're going to be butthurt on that Wednesday morning because we really think Trump's going
to
win again.
I'm already planning to take that day off.
Put it in now.
Call in for work. If we even have a country the next day, who knows?
Right. Okay. So did you guys have a hard time transitioning to Minnesota? Because I hear that all the time, at least like socially. So this is why I'm interested to hear if you guys had a weird time transitioning and integrating into Minnesota life, because I don't know, like, I've been here and like it seems like people are friendly, like we're not assholes that way, like how people talk about people on the East Coast.
And so I'm like, when all our grad school friends that came from other places are like, you know, it's really hard to get integrated in Minnesota. I'm like, what? Really? Why? And a lot of the responses are like clicks. But was it the same for you guys?
No, not for me.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if it's because like I'm from Nebraska, so it's not.
No, it's because of your personality.
Culture. Well, I think it's a personality, and like I already basically understood the culture. Like people talk like you don't like. People are really passive aggressive, and you don't know what they really mean. And I'm like, well, that's how we talk in Nebraska too. You know, you say like, "Oh, we should do something," and the idea is like, "Well, yeah, we should do something, but are we going to do something? Maybe not."
Yeah.
Or it's like, if you want to do something, like that's when you're like, "Oh, well, oh, we should do something. Well, how about next Saturday?" Or you know, and I think that my personality definitely has helped me over the years. Where I mean, when I first came up, I feel like I was a substantially different person because I originally came up for. Undergrad at the U. So I kind of got connected with, you know, the normal way people do if they go to school somewhere. And there's still a couple of people from that group of friends that I still talk to on a semi-regular basis. And then the friends of those friends. And that has helped as I've kind of come back a couple times to Minnesota where I always have a group of people that I can kind of lean on. But I feel like every time that I've like had a job, I've been able to make a couple friends who I do stuff with. And then when to grad school, of course, another way that you kind of are forced to make friends and get out and about and stuff like that. So I guess I didn't have a big problem with meeting people, but I guess I also am a little of a social person.
You're a special case.
Maybe.
Yeah, so you, I mean, it's a tough thing to kind of analyze because you do kind of have to disentangle like yourself as an individual versus like what's cultural and is shared by people in larger groups. So so for myself, I had a bit of a journey before coming here. I was born in a small town in Central California and then moved to San Francisco when I was six, lived in San Francisco until I was 18, and then I went off to college. And I went to college on the East Coast in Baltimore, which is a very different city than San Francisco and a very different city than Minneapolis. And then from there, I got a job out of undergrad in Wisconsin. And so I was exposed to the Midwest kind of lifestyle, I guess we'll go with.
Yeah.
You know, that cheese and beer lifestyle. I was exposed to that. And then once I had lived in Wisconsin pretty much for like the bare minimum amount of time to qualify for in-state reciprocity, I then went over to Minnesota for grad school.
Nice.
And then I just have stayed here ever since.
So like that's like, I'm glad you brought up like untangling different variables, because when people say that, I'm like, well, yeah, moving to a different place with like not knowing anyone and trying to integrate yourself and getting used to the culture, but also meeting people and then more specifically meeting people that you might have alignment with, that's going to be hard in any case.
Yeah.
But I was surprised to hear how people were sort of angling it, because it made it sound like it was especially hard and especially unique in Minnesota. And I was like, is it? Like, what?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't discrediting it. And I was just like, wow, is it a thing? So like.
I think in the Midwest. Yeah. There is that whole, what you're talking about earlier, what you were talking about earlier was that kind of Minnesota nice, where you're going to be kind of nice in your day-to-day interactions with people. You're friendly, but it stays kind of surface level. Mm-hmm. That, to me, was a little bit different because, and again, I have a bit of a weird background. I come from very in-your-face people, which I don't know is necessarily like a California thing. I think Californians have a reputation of just being more like, yeah, everything's great.
Chill. Yeah. Are the in-the-face people, like, are you saying your family?
Yes.
Like,
oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So my mom's tatted up, and she's a fucking punk rocker. And
really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. And she lives in Minnesota now?
Yes.
Can she come on the podcast?
Oh, yeah. I was going to suggest before coming in today that, like, one of the things that we could do is just I tell stories about my mom and the shit she's done this week.
Oh. Let's get to that. Anyways, finish your story, though.
So I have... And I'm kind of notorious for this, and it gets me in a lot of trouble. I'm not going to lie. I have a loud mouth, and I am in your face probably more so than your average Minnesotan, which does kind of turn people off. But at the same time, like, I wear my heart on my sleeve. You're going to know exactly what I think and how I feel. And that, for me, was difficult translating my expectations of how interactions go with how Minnesotans frequently operate, which is you keep your cards close to your chest and you don't necessarily tell everybody what's going on in your life.
Yep. Yep. So like on the West Coast and the East Coast, I'm thinking of times where like someone says like, let's do this thing. And I'm like, not super jazzed about it. I'll be like, oh, okay. Like I'll say that. And like, that means maybe if like at the right time and the right, like everything happens in the right way, I'll join you for that. But like, oh, okay. Means maybe. Like that's not what you normally do on the West Coast and the East Coast.
Probably not. And again, I'm not speaking for everybody on right. the coast, all those coastal elites. I would say, I mean,
like you could say like, nah, that I'm all right. Like somebody's like, come to this musical with me. I have a spare ticket. And like, it's just not your thing. You would be okay with saying like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. I personally would feel comfortable saying that.
Dylan specifically as well, in that scenario.
Right. All right, just let's go into some good generalizations here.
Please.
East Coasters will be like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not going to the movies with you.
Yeah.
But like, they are, I guess, kind of the like outwardly mean version of Minnesotans. I always kind of think of East Coasters as the inverse of Midwesterners, in that Midwesterners will be superficially nice. I think East Coasters are like, kind of superficially mean.
Oh, they embrace it and they play up to it?
And they play up to it. But in reality, like most East Coasters I know, they just want to get through their lives just like everybody else. And they're probably deep down just nice people.
Yeah. I think that's why, like when I was hanging out with some of our other, like my clique for grad school friends, like the Codys and the Bucks, like that's why we were like, one day we were kind of hanging out and we're like, dude, you know who we should invite like more often is Dylan, because we knew you were not a bullshitter. And like that was like that's why we got along, because we felt at like certain times at the Humphrey School, we were walking on eggshells. Cause like, were you guys in policy analysis with us, with Greg Lindsay?
I mean, I took policy analysis. I don't think I was with you
in our class.
Though.
Okay. And so like one of the first, like one of our favorite memories is when you go find your groups in policy analysis to talk about what topic you want to talk about. Like no one had a term for go to this station. Like the whole class was stumped because they were like, we're going to put up these labels on the whiteboard and everyone please go to the one that you're going to choose. And no one knew how to say that. And Buck was like, you mean man your station? And the whole classroom was like, oh my God. He said, man your station.
Did that really happen?
Yes. And that's why this is like one of our favorite memories of Humphrey School, because people were so offended that he used like a gender. And they're like, what do you mean, man? He's like, I just mean like, just pick a station.
Person your station. Figure it out.
And so like, Cody, Buck, and I were like bewildered. Like, come on. Like, we all know what he means. And like,
right.
And so like, We found a way to like not bullshit with each other at least.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh man, Dylan doesn't bullshit either. And I remember another time, like a couple of us were like, oh my God, Dylan is the truth. Is like, we were assigned to, I think, remodel some parts of the Humphrey School website or something like that. And we were like paid to do that. And we were in a meeting and like, we're maybe like an hour and 15 minutes in, and we weren't figuring things out. And at a certain point, Dylan was just like, yeah, I'm going to go. And we're like, what do you mean? And he's just like, you could, like some of us that knew you could tell, like, this is just fucking dumb. Like, I'm going to go. And we're like, okay. And like,
I don't remember this.
Because it's probably so natural to you. But like, even I felt like, we have to figure things out. We've been here for like an hour, 15 hour, 20 minutes. And like, we've made like one decision. Like, we got to get to a place at some point. And like, even I was getting a little frustrated, but I don't have the balls to be like, just like, you didn't say this is fucking dumb, I gotta go. But like, to kind of do that, I just don't have that. So I'm like, well, it's a 2-hour meeting. Like, let's sit through it. And you're like, I gotta go. I'm like, damn, that is awesome.
I really genuinely want to know what I had to go for, or if it was anything. If it could have like, just been,
I want to go take a nap.
Yeah. So, I mean,
so I don't think it's a bad thing that you are real and you wear your heart on your sleeve. I think that's a great thing.
Thank you. I think when it comes to certain decision-making processes, sometimes it is just better just like walk away, come back in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I've I'm hoping that's what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe in a, it could have used a little bit more respect.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's also just in general, just there are a lot of differences between the Midwest, the East Coast, the South, and I would say like the Plain States, the Mountain West, and then the West Coast. Yeah. Those are the rough geographic areas. And then Hawaii and Alaska are like their own fucking things.
Yeah. American Samoa.
And American Samoa. It's its own fucking thing. You know, it's weird to be in a place with no elevation. Like, one of the things that just weirds me out on a day-to-day basis that has nothing to do with the people in the Midwest is just the fact that I will look up at the sky and not see a hill in the distance or the ocean.
Kind of nice, huh?
Yeah, I love it. 100% love
shit
it.
Is real flat here.
Yeah.
I don't know how to handle it. And, you know, there's like a million things that are different, but one of the ones that just strikes me is the different topography, the different kind of climate and just natural scenery here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you're used to it. And you like it?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm indifferent to it.
Like, I mean, to me, it's just, it's very natural. I mean, like, Omaha has hills. They're not like, you know, San Francisco level hills, but like riding your bike is much more difficult because you have to like go up and down like substantially.
But the down is nice.
Well, yeah, but you have to get up first.
Uh-huh.
It's not fun. But then like living here and then when I lived in France, it was also like a very flat part of the country. So I've only really ever lived there. And I remember a couple times like when I went to a conference in like Salt Lake City or some other places where there's mountains, it's like that thing. It's like a cloud, but it doesn't move. This, like it just does like it. It feels oppressive.
Really?
Than,
wow.
Like, to me,
wide open and free.
Oh, to me, it serves as is this weird? But like it's inspiration. Like it's
sure.
It's in the distance. It's something that is infinitely bigger than you, and
that's scary.
I mean, it is in some ways. I can actually admit
you're a coward.
You know, some of these things can be kind of scary. Like if you're actually going up said mountain, but. It's just fascinating to see these things. It makes you feel small. It humbles you like you're a part of the wider world. If you every day can see a mountain that is bigger than any building in your town.
But also it gives you a sense of adventure too, I think. Like, man, like, yeah, sure. we can conquer that. And like,
yeah, white people did a great job at that.
I mean, I picked myself up from the bootstraps and all of that.
Speaking of white people.
Yeah.
Yo. Minnesota has got some white ass people.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's that to me was one of the bigger differences that I noticed when I came in the Midwest is just
you mean white in spirit. Because like sometimes like I have white friends, but they are not white. You know?
Yeah. How do you define that?
They're cool as fuck.
What does that mean to you being white?
Yeah, this is going to be on you to explain that, not me.
Well, tell me if it aligns though. Like,
sure.
Like there are people that are white on the outside and also white on the inside and then also white on the dance floor.
Oh, yeah. But yo, polka's a thing here?
Yeah, see, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah
like, the essence of whiteness runs through them.
My beloved girlfriend, her grandmother, second time I've somehow mentioned her grandmother in this conversation.
Excellent.
Today.
Bring her on with her, your mom.
She's like... she's definitely part German. I'm not completely certain what her background is, but like she will watch like a public access polka TV show that is on at least once a week, if not slightly more. And like that is something I did not have growing up. Like this kind of really white shit that you would just never see a person of color at.
Yeah.
I was the not in every single space, but frequently when I was growing up, I was a minority by being a white person in a lot of spaces. Like my schools up until high school were predominantly Asian or Latino.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of had, I guess, just a different perspective on things until I came to the Midwest and suddenly I'm just like, everybody's white.
But the way that I was trying to define it, you're not white. Dylan is not white.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh,
sure.
No, you should take that as a compliment.
Cool.
Like if you walk around and someone doesn't know you, like, oh, look at that white boy.
Right.
But you're not white.
That's what I thought you meant when you first said it.
Yeah.
I didn't think you meant literally skin color. Yeah.
No, I meant more like
the essence of a person.
Just like the different kinds of white people,
like cable access poker watching white people. Like, that's white.
I think on like, and this is definitely the case on like in some enclaves on the East Coast, but you'll still have like these groups of like Irish people who have been here since like the 1850s, and maybe some Italians who have been here since the 1870s, and they are definitely white in terms of their appearance, mm-hmm. but their cultures that are reflected are a different kind of whiteness than what you see here, which is a lot of like Scandinavian and Germanic peoples. And so though I can, you know, white privilege, I can walk through these spaces in the Midwest and be recognized. Like I didn't feel that same kind of inclusion because they did have a different kind of background, a different kind of life story, a different kind of ancestry than I did.
Yeah. That's where I'm not offended when like, I'm not white, but when people tell me like, boy, you are white, I'm like, yeah, you're kind of right. Yeah.
You're not offended at that? If I were you, I'd be a little offended at that.
I mean, I'm not proud of it, but like, I get it. Like, they're like, oh, like you like cheese and like you act white sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I do. Like I probably interface the world. I think I interface the world as a white person, but it's not reciprocated. Like they see like an Asian person and like, oh, coronavirus, get away from me. But like,
ooh, that's dicey these days. I really hope you're not going through that.
No, I haven't gotten it yet. But I think because people think I'm white, so, like at least the people that I'm around, they're like, it's a white boy.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I know we're running out of time, but I really wanted to loop back to, because it's something that I'm trying to work on, is being less passive aggressive. And I think I'm historically, I've been a very bad white liar, and I think even the white lie is dangerous in a lot of cases. So to hear you say, like, I don't necessarily carry that. Like, do you think you do it more now because you live in Minnesota and you know that that's the norm?
I try really hard not to.
Yeah.
Though I think, going back to the previous topic I made, everything's shades of gray. I'm never going to be fully transparent. I don't think anybody ever could be.
No, no.
And I've told white lies since I could lie.
Right.
Since I learned to lie. But I do try to tell people what is on my mind, what my opinions are, what I'm thinking and feeling, so that because of my life experiences, by doing so, their responses to my actions become more predictable to me. And what I guess I hope is that they appreciate that honesty, telling them these things, and then they, do whatever it is that I want them to do at that time.
Yeah.
The situation.
It makes it difficult when people have to interpret your words. And so I think in a better functioning culture and society, that's what I mean. Like, I think white lies are actually pretty dangerous.
Well, if you wanted to make a really cool argument, you could say that passive aggression and the ability to kind of cloak your words, cloak your language in a way, is art. It is. It's literally the essence of art. If art isn't an example of an expression, then the way that you can kind of create different ways of expressing yourself without saying the literal thing is art. Deep shit.
That's definitely a way to package it.
When I think it's important to communicate, like, communicating with people isn't just about, like, I want to be able to talk the way I want to talk.
For sure, yes.
And that if the other person communicates in a more passive-aggressive way, I think it should, especially if we're trying to get our message to them across, we should try and speak in a way that they understand best. And so if you, being able to speak in a Midwestern way, I think, is important if you're going to live in the Midwest.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, like,
so it's, yeah, so it's
to
like,
compromise and come to like a middle ground.
Yeah.
But if the Midwest wasn't that way, it could be a more better functioning area. I just feel like it's so ambiguous.
Maybe
because things work real well every other place.
I mean, that's a good
point. I mean, everybody has their shit that they're going through.
And yes,
miscommunication.
Oh, of course, yes.
So
I'm not saying that to discredit other types of miscommunication, but wouldn't you rather not have to distill someone's message? Like, what if they just what if more Dylans gave it to you straight?
I think, also as you get older, like, you kind of stop caring as much. So, I mean, one coping mechanism that I've just developed since I've moved to the Midwest is just like, if people want to be upfront, they'll be upfront. If they want to be a little passive aggressive or, kind of cloak what they're saying a little bit, yeah, that's fine.
That's
really
nice.
Care.
I feel like I'm going maybe the other way because I'm just like, as I get older, I've had to deal with more stupid shit and more stupid people. So that's why I'm like,
well, dude, you're an interviewer. You talk to people all the time. It's your job.
I do love talking to people. But that, I mean, I love talking to people because of this. Like, we get to sort of try to distill and like, what, like, tell me what you think so that informs the way I think. It's just like, because I grew up in the Midwest and I think white lies to me is a way of playing small p politics. Like, you have to get people to like you and get people on your side, and who knows where that pays off later in life. And so, like, but if you're willing to, again, if you didn't have to play it because it wasn't the dominant culture that you're set in, like, I think there's reason for a better functioning culture and the system around you. Like, the reason that I sort of began to think and go down this road is, there's so many times where somebody does something objectively stupid, and I'm just like, ah, well, you tried, you know? That's my response. And like, then I actually thought about it, and I'm like, wouldn't it serve that person better to have an honest conversation about how that person failed in that situation? Again, it doesn't have to be derogatory. It doesn't have to be condescending. You can do it in a certain way, but to be like, oh man, the effort was great, man. You put it in, and like, you know, it's not always going to work out. Tell them the truth.
Right.
And but that's, the truth can be conveyed in many ways. And I think
that's what I'm saying. Package it in an appropriate way.
Which I think is the very Midwestern thing to do. Instead of just being like, you're a fucking idiot. Why did you fuck did you do that? Like, what's wrong with you?
I don't know if that's the Midwestern way, though. I think it's to say like, nice try. And then the guy leaves thinking like, that was a nice try, wasn't it?
I think you're confusing it with, like, the boomers' idea of what we went through growing up, where everybody gets a participation trophy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's how I remember growing up, and I don't think that's...
Well, that's definitely how I grew up.
I guess when you're just a little bit older.
I went to Catholic school, like, from grades, like, 4 through 8. And, yeah, we got participation trophies. And it was great. It made me feel great.
But I don't even like dislike, like, okay, maybe participation trophies is not something I would like do for like my children. But I don't even necessarily disagree with you did participate. You did put in effort. Like, you can highlight that. But at the same time, when someone fucks up, like, you can help them fail forward.
Sure.
You don't have to like massage the story in a way where it's like, again, like, oh, you did your best, and have that person leave thinking like, yeah, I did do my best. Like, they'll be tomorrow. Like, why don't you build off of that failure?
And I guess I don't see that not happening.
Oh, I don't know. I enable that, and I do see that happening. But like, Dylan, as someone that's been through sort of the gamut, like East Coast, West Coast, passive aggressive, being more direct, like,
I mean, I'm always going to err on being direct.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
And again, it just goes back to, if I am direct, I can tell people what is on my mind, and I have a greater success rate in getting a certain behavior that I want down the line, which is, it sounds really analytical. It sounds really controlling, and you can make that argument. I'm sure it is. But at the same time, I feel like if somebody does that to me, then I agree. Like, I would learn from some action. It's not always going to feel great, but, you know, down the line, it has an effect that is theoretically more positive.
I think so, too. And I think having that mindset, too, makes me feel weird when I get compliments. It's just like, okay, like, you can start with a compliment if you want, but, like, let's get to the shit that's actually going to make me improve on myself. Like, tell me what I did wrong. Like, that, I actually enjoy that part of the conversation a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alex, final thoughts?
I mean, I feel like by being passive aggressive, you can also shape the way that people behave and interact with you and communicate with you.
Yeah, in a worse way.
I don't agree. That's an interesting interpretation, man.
Fine, fair enough. I think the lesson is that Alex and I have to agree to disagree many times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. cute.
Well, that's why we love each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, you guys. I want to thank you guys for coming on. Maybe come back on once November happens.
Yeah, I might actually bring my flask that time.
Yeah, I think we'll all need it.
To celebrate, right?
Sure.
You think so?
You think so?
Here's
final predictions. Biden versus Trump. Yay, nay.
I think it's slightly more likely.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's what I'm banking on. And then Biden versus Trump. Who wins?
Biden.
I would. I mean, like I said, I gotta hope that Biden's gonna do it.
But that's your realistic evaluation. Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think he can win. I think. Because I follow politics so much, he's got a path to win. Trump also has a path to win. It's just a matter of who follows their game plan better.
Yeah, that's where I diverge from you guys. I think it's Biden, Trump, 4 more years of Trump, and then we have Mike Pence to look forward to. I don't know. Okay, thanks again, you guys. You can follow the Quality Under Pressure podcast on Twitter at QUP Podcast. Yep.
That's the one.
And then on Facebook and Instagram at Quality Under Pressure. And you can send emails at qualityunderpressure@gmail.com. Do you guys have social medias that people can find you on? No. That you want people to find you on?
DAdams415 Instagram.
Word.